And people look at us like we're nuts, and they're like, the thing is, I love it. Yeah. I love it. They're like, well, don't you just want to go home sometime and watch television? Like, no, I want to make television.
On this episode of C-Level, I sit down with my good friend Chris Ledoux, founder and VFX supervisor of Crafty Apes, the VFX company behind Stranger Things, Jumanji, Doctor Strange, and many more.
For the very small percentage of people that don't know who Crafty Apes is and who you are, give me a little bit of background. Like, how did you get started? Where are you from? What's Crafty Apes about?
Originally, I'm from an island in Alaska called Kodiak Island. That's where I originally hail from and my family hails from because it's a family business.
Right.
And I had moved to Los Angeles, I moved to San Francisco in 2004 and did my first visual effects job there for a movie called Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
And I composited
yep,
on
very
that.
Familiar. Yep.
And it was fun. It was I loved it. Fell in love with the business. And 2005, I moved to Los Angeles. So in 2005, moved to Los Angeles, spent about a year in a random city called Santa Maria.
Yeah.
Where we made Pan's Labyrinth mm-hmm. and did some other movies.
Okay.
And then went back to LA, and in 2007, we started the company. Or sorry, 2011, we started the company. We started in Culver City. Actually, technically for 3 months, we started in Venice
mm-hmm.
at this 200-square-foot trailer park WeWork.
It was
very humble beginnings.
A lot of people have those humble beginnings.
It was a 200, yeah, it was yeah. just me, yeah. Tim, and Jason, and Mark in an office. And
yeah.
a couple months later, we went to Culver City.
Right.
And while we were there, one of our first clients was Lionsgate
mm-hmm.
and Tyler Perry specifically.
Right.
So that started drawing me to Atlanta. And I started filming here in 2012, 2013. And while I was here, I started learning about the actual tax credit mm-hmm. and how it worked. And I started, you could almost smell the buzz in the air, right. feel it. There was like, man, there's something happening here.
Right.
And I looked around, there wasn't any other really VFX companies of, you know, a certain, you know, caliber, you
right.
know, and went back to California and I told everyone, I said, hey, I think we should expand to Atlanta. I think, you know, let's go for it.
Right.
And it took some convincing. There was some back and forth.
Right,
But my brother Tim was strongly on board with it. And he's the one who actually did the first operation out here. So we got a call in March of 2014 for a pilot.
Okay.
And it was a colleague of ours who was doing a TV show and said, hey, I heard you guys are in Atlanta. We're like, totally.
Yeah.
And we filed the paperwork. Tim and our other colleague Josh jumped in a truck and drove across the country with a bunch of computers.
Wow.
And we started downtown. And yeah. I'm not even, it was close to underground.
Right.
And close to gunshots. And they did the pilot.
Gosh.
And then I was already doing a TV show that was based out of here, but we weren't here officially yet. So that, I started filming in May. And then I was like, okay, we got to be. I called my wife, and yeah. she had just given birth to our child. And
oh,
I was like,
yeah.
by the way, we're moving to Atlanta.
Here it is.
Yeah, just so you know, you know let's just get all the change out of the way at once.
Right, right.
And she had been in, she was born and raised in LA for 39 years, never
oh, wow.
lived anywhere else.
Oh,
and
wow. So what was she thinking that Atlanta was like?
She had been here before,
yeah.
and she's in production also, so she loved it.
Yeah.
She actually prefers it now.
Yeah.
And, so it's been great. I mean, it must have been like the gold rush in Alaska in 1910 or, you know, 1849 gold rush. There's a certain buzz in the air here.
Right.
There's a certain ambition. There's a certain person that it attracts. There's a certain twinkle in their eye.
Right.
And so the kind of people you're around, like I love being in LA because there's more creative people in LA than anywhere in the universe,
right.
you know, just shoved into one spot. And I loved it for that reason. And in Atlanta, that you have all these ambitious people mm-hmm. in a variety of industries.
Right.
And with film in general, you know, because we have interests, you know, we're interested in all of filmmaking. We do visual effects, but, you know, we'll go shoot our own stuff, right? And
uh-huh.
so the people you meet here are people that are hungry and they're ambitious, and that sort of attitude is what I really like. They don't complain.
Right.
Every day working in film is kind of a blessing. You know, it's not quite being quarterback of the Seahawks, but it was the next best thing.
So right.
When you're on, you know, it's really never a bad day when you stop and think about it for a second.
Right.
And so
you get paid to play. That's,
well, yeah, no. And, you know, in a lot of areas you go on set and people act like, you know, they're basically like, you know, coal miners getting shot.
Right.
You know,
right,
like, you know,
right,
it's just so
right.
Like, man, we're making movies.
Right.
We're getting paid,
paid
for
to
it.
Do this.
We're paid pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I couldn't be happier, really. And I mean that in all sincerity. It's not, I really am happy out here. It's cool. And honestly, it's, I've never been to a place where you couldn't find a good time. I mean, good bars here.
Right, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, and that's what I love about Atlanta, too, is It's got everything, you know, like you're like 4 hours to the beach, you know, you can go to Northwest Florida, right? You can go over to Savannah, you got the mountains. I mean, it's the landscape's great. You've got the city, right? So there's the ITP, OTP, right? So for people who don't know, inside the perimeter, outside the perimeter,
I just moved outside the perimeter.
Did you? Yeah. I see, like for me, like I love working in the city, but like our office is right outside the perimeter, which is kind of convenient for everybody. But I love living like out into the country, like a little bit more, I just moved
to the country.
Yeah, a little bit more space, you know, but I love the hustle and bustle. And to mention, to piggyback on what you were saying before about the entertainment business, what I love is that, like you said, there's a lot of hustlers out here. There's a lot of people that are willing to make something happen. And the entertainment business, what I'm finding in Atlanta, is it can be whatever it wants to be.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like, you know, New York and LA has their pretty much their set ways, whereas Atlanta, it's like this thing that's constantly evolving and growing.
No, there's this chance to invent and be whatever we want to be. And it's right. The longer things progress in any industry or anyone's life, the more you get set in those ways, the more the script gets hardened. It's like, you know, I came from a small town.
Right.
You hit a certain age and you are who you are.
Right.
And that's who you'll always be.
Right.
And, you know, when I moved away to college, you know, and away from there, you know, you realize, you know, when I went to college at like 18, you can invent yourself.
Right.
You can be whoever you want. Yeah. And that's what, on a larger macro level, we can do whatever we want here right now. We have an opportunity.
Right.
You know, right now we are we're the middle of the ecosystem. We're the production. We're not the funding. We're not the distribution.
Right.
But that's coming, and we have the chance right now to be whatever we want, to create whatever we want.
Right.
You know, and you hear a lot of people, you know, when you talk to people in film, and, you know, when you talk to a lot of, you know, budding filmmakers, and they're like, well, how does this work? And then, you know, inevitably that guy goes, well, let me tell you, you know,
yeah,
it's like, well, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, and if
innovate.
You look at anything,
yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm a big football guy. It's like when Bill Walsh coughed up the West Coast offense, everyone's like, you have to run the ball to win the game. It's like, there you go. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
So that's really exciting because we can decide, it's even visual effects, which is the youngest part of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're only 20, 30 years old, really.
Right.
And we come up with new ways to do things all the time.
Right.
You know, like, oh, let's try this technique or this piece of software. Let's tie it into the pipeline. Like, go hire that Bulgarian coder.
Right.
You know, it's like,
right.
And that's what I truly love about visual effects is every day is different for me.
Yeah.
Every day is different problems to solve. And they're hectic and crazy.
Right.
But that's feeling you get when you've actually conquered a large battle is fantastic.
Yeah.
And so that's what I love about here. It's the problem solving.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
So what is the process of VFX? Like, what do you have, like, a specific way? Like, you get a script, you storyboard it out?
Yeah, I mean,
out, like,
there's a lot of different ways we do work on a larger movie. Like, we just did a lot of shots on Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
On a movie like that, every shot's a visual effect.
Right.
So you're saying, in that kind of movie, maybe there's 2,500 cuts.
Right.
You know, because we look at our widget is a shot from cut to cut.
Right.
You know, and so they'll send us shots to bid. They've already shot at that point, you know, or if they're about to shoot. So that's one way we do work. A lot of ways we do work, especially out here, is it's soup to nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Someone hands us a script, we break it down, we say, here's what we think the visual effects are.
Right.
And then all that's kind of BS because then they shoot what they shoot and they edit what they
edit.
And it's more of a guide.
Right, right.
And so it's hard for line producers with VFX because we're kind of like the Department of Defense black market budget.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
we try to keep prices down, but
because
they've now deducted so many shooting days, you know, it used to be people would have 90 days to shoot a movie.
Right.
And that still happens if your name is Scorsese.
Right,
you know, now
exactly.
People get 30 days. Well, it's not like the tech of filmmaking has gotten that much better. So what happens is there's more mistakes because now they rely on us as an insurance policy.
Right.
Like, oh, we got rained out that day. Go green screen. VFX will make it. Or, there's three grips smoking cigarettes in the background. How do you get rid of that?
Right,
you know, it's like VFX.
Right.
And so a lot of our work is stuff that's completely unplanned.
Yeah.
You know, and we've...
So you get that call like, hey, we need to remove that bottle the, you know, PA left on set or something like
that. Well, it happens all the time,
people.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, this actor, you know, has a double chin. And I'm like, my God, he's 70 years old. Of course he does. Like, and they're like,
right,
you know,
right,
they're
right,
like,
right.
Yeah, but
right.
People don't know that.
Right,
and like
right.
The, and so we're able to, even in that realm, for example, we can extend, if you think of an actor as having like a shelf life,
mm-hmm.
we're able to extend that now.
Wow.
You know, especially if you're like an action star or something like that. You know, there's, we can change quite a bit, you know, environments, people. So given that, you know, it's, it saves money in the long run. Because if you think how much a shooting day costs, and we're able to save shooting days now. Like, you know, there was one movie we did where they didn't get a line from an actress. And they're like, oh man, it's going to cost us like so much money to go reshoot this. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I just noticed my producer here has the same lips as the actress. I'm like, I want to do the Conan O'Brien thing. Shoot her saying the line and then surgically, and we did it, and it's seamless. You can't tell. Awesome. And so we're able to do completely change the world in post, which it's honestly, it's good and it's also hard because if you, I think part of creativity is creativity loves a sandbox.
Right.
Like if someone says to me, hey, Chris, can you write a treatment? I'm like, okay, what's the topic? And they're like, anything you want. I'm like, oh
yeah.
But if somebody says, here's the parameters,
yeah.
then my mind starts spinning because creativity now knows the rules it can push and break. Mm-hmm. So I think when you shoot a film in 1978, you got what you got.
Right.
And you're going to cut it. Actually cut it, the film.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out how to do it within that sandbox.
Right.
And I think it's hard now because creatively, if you shot a movie tomorrow, but then you, after you shot it, I said, well, we can actually do quite a bit. It sounds good. Mm-hmm. But I think creatively, it sometimes becomes difficult for people because they're like, well, can I do this?
Right.
Can I do this? And they don't realize that, well, you said I could do this, so isn't this the same price? And you're like, no, the second one involves a dragon.
Right.
And... it's so we do a lot of education. We have to educate our clients on actually what they're buying and what they're paying for. And our whole world is based on time.
Right.
They're like, well, why does that take 50 hours and that takes 4 hours? I'm like, well, because of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so there's a lot of misconceptions, which we have to combat. You know, like, you know, people really do think we have dinosaur buttons, you know, and there's like, you know, fancy like software that the Japanese probably wrote. You're like, yeah, don't you just have like a Godzilla button you just hit and it just
appears. Oh. Yeah. Now like, we have to create that.
No, and that's the thing. At the end of the day, the software is amazing, but the artists are what do everything. And the amount of attention to detail and knowledge about tech and art and, you know, the craft of, you know, even basic composition.
Right.
Has to be pretty extensive. And so it's that's what's fun about it, is you're pulling from all these different avenues.
Right.
And, you know, so given that, it's there's something we have, it's called Blinn's Law. And it has to do with computing power, because we're always, you know, we're getting faster computers, and everyone's like, oh man, this is amazing. Yeah. Like, now we can do stuff faster. And what the client asks for now just expands to fill that bubble.
Right.
And continuously expands to fill it.
Right.
And I was reading something on Reddit the other day where someone from DreamWorks was talking, and they were they had to re-render Toy Story 1, the original.
Gosh.
And they because they needed to do some tests to compare.
Right.
And they hit the button, they went to lunch, and they came back, and the render farm was off. They're like, why's the render farm off? It should be going. The render farm had already re-rendered the entire movie in a couple hours.
Wow.
But you think that's 20 years ago when the first one came out.
Right.
And that's
how,
you know, so.
Right.
But these guys are like, we're still working the same amount of hours. Yeah, like, it doesn't change. You know, so now the client wants this and wants it. So, that's the nature of what we're doing. Is it never? I don't think it'll change for, you know, as we get into VR, AR, artificial intelligence, and machine learning.
Yeah.
I think 30 years from now.
Yeah.
VFX artists will still be saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I did 14 hours yesterday. Like, what happened? Like,
yeah.
Well, you know, the director hated the whole movie, so we redid the whole thing.
Like, yeah. Exactly.
So, but that's what's fun about it. It's like I said, every day is different.
I like to say, like, I know enough to be dangerous, but I hire the professionals that know it. And I've always been fascinated with technology and the changes that are happening. I could say happen so fast. So in the VFX world, what are some of the things that we can do now that we weren't able to do in the past? And what are some of the things that are on the horizon that you see that make your job easier?
There's so many. I mean, take from basic shot tracking. You know, we have to track cameras. Mm-hmm. In the 90s, that was insane. Matchimation, you know, that's still largely manual, but there's software to help out. The rigging of characters, the rendering of CG, the way we light CG, the way we composite and integrate that CG into the real world. The tech, you know, because every day you stand on the shoulders of those that came before you.
Right.
And so that knowledge accumulates. So what's happened with us is we have way more shots than ever. And it's the stuff you would never imagine.
Yeah.
It's, well, the director doesn't like where this book's sitting on the shelf. Like, all right.
Move it. Like, you know, and, right.
Or we don't like, you know, a big one is splits. Like, oh, yeah. We like the actor in this take, but we like the actress in this take. Can you, you know.
So they're really taking advantage of the technology.
Oh, yeah. That as they get savvier, and you get some really savvy editors out there, mm-hmm. they can do a lot of grafting. Mm-hmm. And they can completely change what was shot or what it was intended for because they know what we're capable of. And a lot of times people come to us with ideas.
Right.
And they say, what can you do? And that's what happened on, say, Hidden Figures, for example.
Yeah, right.
Because it was not a high-budget movie. And when they saw the first cut after we're done shooting, you know, they were like, oh man, we got a great movie on our hands. Mm. How do we expand the production scope? Because they didn't have the money to go back and shoot, so the director came to me and said, what can you do? And I started looking at our shots, and I go, okay, well, you know, we shot this over at, you know, OFS. Mm. That's, the scene actually took place in Florida.
Right.
Let's roto out this guy. I'll go down to Florida. I'll go to Canaveral. I'll get a bunch of plates.
Get it, yeah.
And so I called up Canaveral, got a bunch of plates from him, you know, went there and shot, just grabbed my red camera.
Right.
And shot a bunch of plates and then completely changed locations on a ton of these things. Right. And all of a sudden the scope of the movie felt way more expensive. It felt like a bigger project.
Right.
And a lot of that stuff, because we shot pretty much all Atlanta.
Right.
And, you know, these locations, a lot of them didn't look like the real. So we were trying to do that. And so by doing, you know, we're creating, you know, let's put a CG rocket in here. Let's do this.
So
we're able to help the storytellers in that way because production scope and quality is a subconscious thing.
Yep.
It's easy to say, well, production quality, well, what does that mean? You know, it's like,
right.
Well, it means more aerial shots. Like, you know, so a lot of, you know, you look at what a low budget movie looks like versus a high budget, it's one of the first things you see.
Yep.
And there's something in the audience when they feel a certain quality, mm-hmm. and it's very subconscious. It's why like 24p looks so different to you than 60i.
Right.
And it all of a sudden you look at projects and receive them in a wholly different way.
Right. What's some advice you can give, like, someone that wants to step into the VFX world and then your industry, like, what are some good advice you can give them?
Well, the software, the tutorials, mm-hmm. are all online.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
For a few $100, you could literally have every video, every piece of training you would need to become a good artist. Mm-hmm. What you'd be missing, and I'm not saying someone would have it, is you'd be missing a work ethic, mm-hmm. and a client. And the important thing about having a client, and even if it's a free client, if your buddy's making a music video or whatever, it is a business. And which means you were trying to interpret someone else's vision. Now you can always make your own stuff and go your own route, and we all do it, and that's right. Great. But if you're trying to make money off it, it means at some point you are going to have a client. And you are going to come down to that thing, which ties in what we're already talking about, human communication. You're like, I want an elephant. Well, what kind of elephant? A cool one. What does that mean, cool? Like, you know, you're cool or am I cool?
Right.
I don't like mid-century modern. Right. I think it's tacky. Like, so, given it is tacky. Given that, I have to interpret what you're saying. I have to do, which is the fun part, is I have to do my best to look at the world from Chris de Blasio's point of view. Be like, has he ever seen an elephant? Like, is he basing this off of Dumbo or Willy Wonka? Like, what
right,
is he?
Right.
And
so they have to learn to extract that information.
You have
from
to learn
client.
To deal with clients, yeah. And you have to learn that you're going to do something. You have to build a thick skin. You are going to create something that you think is the greatest thing ever, and a client's going to tell you you're an idiot, and your IQ could be 50 points higher than the client.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
They're signing the check.
They're still so a client. Right.
That's the hard part about it. And remember, I tell people this is not art; it's a craft, and arts and crafts are different. Art is, you know, your retired mother painting a rose,
right.
George Bush painting a
right.
squirrel.
Right.
That's art.
Right.
Craft is the guy, the architect, the person who combines art and tech.
Yeah.
And you have to understand both, and you have to develop that thick skin. And all these shots in this reel and stuff, these all went through multiple iterations. Like, the only time you get version one finals are when you're on a low-budget TV show. There's no time.
Right.
But when you're on a movie, I was on one movie, our average final was version 136 for the average final.
Wow.
Over and over. And they go this way and they tell you, like, no, make it this way, make it this
so
way.
So patience would also
you
be
you have
another
to develop patience.
Yeah.
It's you have to just know what your life is. You know, it helps to, I got lucky. My wife's in production. And so she understands what this is.
Yeah.
If your significant other is not in production, probably looking at divorce.
Yes.
It's challenging. Because they just don't understand. They're like, well, don't you just get off at five? And you're like, I'm not a high school principal.
And I lucked out. My wife's in medical, so she's used to the schedules. So I think that's the one exception. she works crazy hours.
And people look at us like we're nuts. And they're like, the thing is, I love it. I love it. They're like, well, don't you just want to go home sometime and watch television? Like, no, I want to make television. Like, I don't want to sit in my couch and watch the news. Like, you go get brainwashed. It's like,
it's funny, I think as filmmakers, like, we look at work differently. It's sometimes that suspension of disbelief is just not there because we're looking at, and you're probably looking at, oh man, that VFX could have done this, or I see the pixelation there, or whatever it is, you know. So sometimes, we look at it differently.
It's hard, I'll never enjoy things the same way. You know, it's the same way, like, an average person might. They might watch a movie and just be wowed by it.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it. And I'm breaking it down.
Right.
You know, but I enjoy stories so much that I can just turn my. Like, I was watching Chernobyl, and I noticed a couple times where I'm like, I mean, and the work was great. There were no flaws. I'm like, oh, I wonder how long that simulation took.
Yeah.
That's a lot of smoke right there.
Right.
Like, wonder,
right.
There's a lot of road odor.
But
it doesn't make it. I still enjoy them. I just don't have any time to watch.
Yeah.
So, but you know, so I'm constantly, you know. Netflix is my friend. I'm watching Star Trek Voyager over and over
again. That's awesome. Well, hey, man, this has been great. Thank you for giving me the tour. And, dude, keep up the great work.
Thank you, sir.
What you're doing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you find the C-Level Facebook group, sign up to the group, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you get the latest episode. Until next time.